שלום, בוקר טוב, חודש טוב, all of the above. It's good to be here again. The topic for today, as I called it, is the revival, the redemption, and Sfirat HaOmer. What I wish to start with, I want to describe a very interesting phenomenon. And as time progresses, it seems to me to be more and more amazing. In Mil Tashem, this week, we will be merited to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut, the modern Chag of Redemption. And it's very interesting to see that all the Chagim that have to do with the current Atchalta de Geula, meaning Yom HaTzmaut, and obviously Yom Yerushalayim that will, in Mil Tashem, occur at Kavchet B'Iyar, all happen to fall on Sfirat HaOmer. Why is it so interesting? It is interesting because the Midrash in Vayikra Rabbah, in source number one, in a sense, predicted this. Meaning, the Midrash says, thousands of years ago, ומאיזה זכות זכו ישראל לירש הארץ, meaning, on what account were Bnei Yisrael merited to inherit Eretz Yisrael? On what account, I add, on what account will we be merited to return to Eretz Yisrael? Hevei Omer bizchut mitzvat haOmer. Bizchut yakana is the mitzvah of the Omer. Of all the 613 mitzvot that appear in the Torah, there is one unique mitzvah. And if we are strict about it, this mitzvah of the Omer, that will be our ticket to Eretz Yisrael. And the Midrash continues, by the way, it's very interesting. The Midrash says that Abraham, when he inherited Eretz Yisrael, it was on the account of mitzvah the Omer. And the Midrash even quotes that Hashem says to Abraham, "Vata et briti tishmo." And what is the brit? What is the covenant that Hashem is expecting Abraham to observe? That is mitzvah HaOmer, and which is, you know, taking this very much to the extreme, because mitzvah HaOmer is never considered a covenant. I'm not going to get into that, but just understand that according to the Midrash, even Avraham was merited to enter Eretz Yisrael because of mitzvah HaOmer. So the first question I want to start off with is, what is the connection between mitzvah HaOmer, and in our days, mitzvah Sfirat HaOmer, and entering Eretz Yisrael, as we see that it is becoming a reality. And even more so, by the way, this is not a chiddush of the Midrash. It's not just that the Midrash brings this out of nowhere, out of the blue. The Midrash obviously bases the connection between Sfirat HaOmer and redemption, between Sfirat HaOmer and the returning to Eretz Yisrael, on the Psukim. The Torah, in source number 2, in Sefer Vayikra, in Perek of Gimel, the Torah says as follows, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, v'amalta alehim, ki tavou el haaretz asher ani noten lachem, uktzartem et ktzira, ve'evetem et omer, rashit ktzirchem el kohen. Obviously, one might say that what the Torah is saying here is that you can only observe the mitzvah of the Omer in Eretz Yisrael, which is obviously true. But it seems to me that what the Midrash is saying here is not just that technically the barley is going to be cut in Eretz Yisrael and the mitzvah of the Omer is going to be observed in Eretz Yisrael, but even more so, the Midrash is saying, Ki tavou el haaretz, you will enter Eretz Yisrael because of the mitzvah of the Omer. That is what the Midrash is trying to highlight. And this is the issue that we have to figure out for ourselves. What is the connection between the Omer and entering Eretz Yisrael? I want to add to this. Let's try to, you know, talk about this mitzvah of the Omer for a minute. There's a very famous question, not mine, but the Zohar's, and it has to do with the offering of the Omer. Even more so, it has to do with the process that occurs during Sfirat HaOmer. A few weeks ago, we were merited to celebrate Pesach. Now, I think that all the members in this room will agree with me that during Pesach, or the weeks before Pesach, we have declared war against any shred, any piece of chametz, or what might be safek chametz, and even dust included. We were obsessed with spring cleaning, which is a good excuse when you have to do ביטול חמץ. But anyways, we have abolished חמץ in every possible way. We burn it, we toss it, we do whatever we can. 50 days later, after counting the Omer, only 50 days later, we enter Chag HaShavuot, and as the Torah says, in source number 2, we bring a very unique offering on Chag HaShavuot. What is that? What is the Korban? Korban Shtei HaLechem. And the Torah says, so that we won't have any mistakes, the Torah says explicitly, I'm reading in source number 2, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, מימושבותיכם תביאו לחם תנופה שתיים, שני עשרונים, סולת תהיינה, חמץ תאפנה. It has to be חמץ. It has to be חמץ. And the Zohar is asking, if we're talking about Tfilat HaOmer here, what is the process? What's going on here? What happened during those 50 days that just a minute ago we had to abolish every chametz, and all of a sudden not only are we allowed to eat chametz, but also we are expected to sacrifice this chametz as a korban. What happened to the chametz during those 50 days? What is the educational process that we are undergoing during Tfilat HaOmer? So we were asking, we started off by asking, what is the connection between the mitzvah of Tfilat HaOmer and Eretz Yisrael, right? We moved on to ask, what is the educational process that we are undergoing during Tfilat HaOmer based on the question of the Zohar? What happened to the chametz? All of a sudden became the hero of the day. You sacrificed it as a korban in Yom HaShavuot. And now let's move on to a third question I have about Tfilat HaOmer. When do we start? When do we start Tfilat HaOmer? Right, exactly. So we started the second day of Pesach. Why? Because the Torah says, right, we all know the song, "Usfalter lachem mimachorat haShabbat." Right, we read it in the Pesukim you have in source number 2. Mimachorat haShabbat. What is mimachorat haShabbat? Literally, the day after Shabbat. And that is why I wish to bring up in this context a very well-known machloket. It's not even a machloket. It was a big, big dispute between the Purushim, which we call our sages, our Chachamim, and a cult called the Baitosim. Baitosim. Baitosim, Bet Yud Yud Taf Vav Samech Yud Min. It appears in source number 3. We'll read it in a second. According to the approach of the Baitosim, they were a cult, I don't want to get into it, but bad, more or less, they were a cult that believed in the Torah, but nevertheless did not believe in the power of the Torah Shebe'al Peh, in the Mishnah, obviously the Talmud. And in that sense, they were very strict about following the words of the Torah, literally, without any commentator, without any more modern commentators at that time. Obviously, that is impossible, because sometimes you cannot just follow the commandments of the Torah without having a certain explanation to it. This is one of the issues. The Baitosim claim that Mimochorat HaShabbat, meaning the beginning of Tfilat HaOmer, has to occur on a Sunday. Mimochorat HaShabbat means the day after Shabbat. By the way, their claim is not that far from reality. It makes a lot of sense. They support their claims on two grounds. First of all, literally, if you read through the Torah, generally the word Shabbat does refer to Shabbat and not to Yom Tov. And obviously, it's not clear when you read the Psukim that talk about Tfilat HaOmer that the Torah does intend for it to occur on Motzei first Yom Tov, but rather, it seems, literally, that it would be good fine to understand this as Motzei Shabbat. But even more so, other than just literally, the foundations for their claims, are actually very, very logical. What do the Baitosim claim? The Baitosim say as follows. You know, nowadays, the Jewish calendar was constructed in a manner that we know that there is a rule, Lo Badu Pesach, meaning Pesach will never occur on a Friday. We will never have Leil HaSeder Thursday night. But this is a kind of a modern thing. At the time of the Talmud, Pesach could theoretically occur on a Friday, meaning Leil HaSeder on Thursday night. And according to the Perush, that means Mechorat HaShabbat is the second day of Pesach, meaning Matzei first Yom Tov, that would mean that Sfilat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer, and the offering of the Omer will start when? On Shabbat. Now we have to understand, nowadays we don't see it because we don't have a Beit Mikdash, unfortunately, Be'avonoteinu. But at those times, the offering of the Omer was involved with a lot of melachot, which had to do, in fact, with Chidul Shabbat. You cut down the barley, that is Chidul Shabbat. You do a very big happening, you offer the Omer, that is Chidul Shabbat. The Beit Yosef say, if we explain the Pasuk, according to which Mimochorat HaShabbat means a Sunday, that would mean that there will never be a Chilul Shabbat with relation to the offering of the Omer. According to the Perush of the Prushim, of our sages, Mimochorat HaShabbat, which is actually the second day of Pesach, could theoretically be a Shabbat, and could be involved with Chilul Shabbat. So the approach of the Beit Yosef makes a lot of sense, both linguistically and obviously logically. This is a very good way of avoiding a massive Chilul Shabbat. Nevertheless, it seems that our sages go out of their way so strict about doing this counting of the Omer, providing for the offering of the Omer, the second day of Pesach, even if it means Chilul Shabbat. And what do I mean? The Midrash that appears in source number 3 describes to us how they would do it at those times. What would the offering of the Omer be like? And the Midrash says, Ketzad ha'yosim, Shluchei Beit Din yotzim me'erev Yom Tov, ועושים אותו כריחות המחובר לקרקע כדי שיהיה נוח לקצור. Meaning, the first Yom Tov, that evening, the evening of the first Yom Tov, they would send messengers to the field and they would tie certain, threads to certain, to barley, and that barley is the barley that's eventually going to be ripped. And the Midrash says, וכל העיירות הסמוכות לשם מתכנסות לשם כדי שיהיה נקצר בעסק גדול. And all the bordering towns, everyone who's near, thousands of people are gathering around that field. It was a big, big happening. This is just the introduction. Now imagine what it would be like, says the Midrash. כיוון שחשכה, אומר להם, בא השמש, אומרים הם, בא השמש, אומרים הם. Says the Midrash, Motzei that Chag, when the sun had set and it's evening already, the person who's about to trip the barley, the Omer, is asking all that massive crowd, is it dark outside? And they all yell, yes. Is it dark outside? They all yes, yell yes. For 3 times. He asks them 3 times, and they respond 3 times. Magal zu omrim hen. Magal zu omrim hen. And then he says, this sickle, this knife, I should cut with this knife. And they say, yes, this knife, yes, this knife, yes. Kupa zo omrim hen. Kupa zo omrim hen. This basket, should I put the Omer in this basket, the Omer that I'm cutting? And they all say, yes, this basket, yes, this basket, yes, for 3 times. Now I'm getting to the punchline. B'Shabbat, if this event happens to occur on Shabbat, B'Shabbat Omer Lahem, Shabbat Zu Omrim Hen, Shabbat Zu Omrim Hen. He's saying to the crowd, "Is it Shabbat now?" And everyone says, "Yes." "Is it Shabbat now?" Everyone yells, "Yes." "Is it Shabbat now?" "Yes." To make everyone understand, this is Shabbat, and now I'm going to do the following. Omer lahem, "Ektzor?" Vehem omrim lo, "Ktzor." "Ektzor?" Vehem omrim lo, "Ktzor." Shlosha pe'amim al kol davar. And now, after asking them, "Is it Shabbat now?" He's saying to them, "Shall I cut during Shabbat? Shall I cut?" And they say, "Cut! Shall I cut on Shabbat?" And they say, "Cut! Shall I cut?" "Cut." Says the Midrash, "Hem omrim lo, ktzor shlosh, shlosha pe'amim al kol davar ve'davar, ve'em omrim lo, hen, hen, hen. Kol kach lama." Why was it so important to say, "I am cutting the Omer on Shabbat"? Why? "Mipnei habaitosim shehayu omrim en ktzirat ha'onah b'motzei yom tov." This is all this happening and yelling out Shabbat and I'm cutting the Omer is all in answer to the baitosim. We're saying to the baitosim, "We don't accept your approach. This is what we're doing. Chilul Shabbat, not Chilul Shabbat, but apparently we are doing something that goes against the Shabbat." And my question is, if, I'm not saying, we know that in the Torah we have certain mitzvot that go against, that seem to be in apparent violation of the Shabbat, nevertheless we don't consider it a Chilul Shabbat, just like the Avodah of the Beit Mikdash, right? The Avodah of the Mishkan. Lametet melach, avot melachah that we study in Shabbat are actually the lametet melachot that we did in the Mishkan. We know that when the Torah explicitly tells us to do something that is against the general rule of Shabbat, we do it. Here the Torah was never explicit. It was never clear from the pshat of the Torah that this melacha is, it's legitimate to do it on Shabbat. The Baitosim say, literally, it's easier to interpret the Torah as if it's saying that the counting of the Omer should begin on a Sunday, and by doing so we're also preventing ourselves from what they call a Chilul Shabbat. Why is it so important for the Prushim to stress that Sfirat Omer and that the offering of the Omer may occur on Shabbat despite the Melacha that is involved? That is my question. Now, obviously, this is not just my question. Many commentators related to this issue. One of which is Rav Kook. And Rav Kook, in source number 5, is relating explicitly to the very interesting machlokes between the Prushim and the Baitosim, and suggesting the following explanation. Says Rav Kook, "Hachaklaut הלוהי אצל כל העמים רק גורם כלכלי חיוני פשוט." What is the Omer, says Rav Kook? Omer is like, you know, this is the spring, the beginning of the agricultural year. This is where the action begins. You start to harvest, you start working on the land, especially in Eretz Yisrael. Now, for many nations, agriculture is considered a means for survival. I plant certain, you know, trees, whatever. I put seeds in the ground because I want to manufacture fruits and vegetables so that I can eat, so that I can sell, I can make a living. It is a means for survival. It's panasa. That says Rav Kook. Aval ha'am asher hanoseh shelo kulo kodesh kodashim ve'arso ושפתו וכל הרחב כולם קודשים, הרי גם חקלאותו כולה ספוגת קודש. Says Rav Kook, but nevertheless Am Yisrael is different than any other nations. You know why? Because we carry the title Kodesh Kodashim, and therefore, because we're not just a holy nation, we are the nation of the Holy of the Holies. There are other nations that understand holiness. We talked about this in the past when we were talking about Hanukkah. We understand the message of Kodesh Kodashim, and therefore for our nation, even our land, even our language, even as he says this, our honor, our dignity, even our agriculture, all of that is holy. What is he saying here? What does it mean that we carry the title Kodesh Kodashim, and for us agriculture is holy? So we have referred to this in the past, and excuse me for boring you with the question again, but I will repeat it again. I'm asking you, what is Kodesh Kodashim? You remember we talked about this. For those of you... There's holiness, and there's secularity. What's Kodesh Kodashim? What could be more holy than holy? You remember I kept saying, I said, if there is Hayafesh Bayafim, right? In Hebrew we can say Hayafesh Bayafim. So there are many good-looking men, but he is exceptionally good-looking. HaChachama Shebachachamot, very, a lot of wise girls, but she is exceptionally bright. What is Kodesh Kodashim? What could be more holy than holy? Holiness is infinite. There's no end to it. No beginning. It's infinite. And I asked, and I'll repeat the question, I assume for the purpose of the discussion, I will bring three boxes into this room, and we will do some order here, and I will ask people to sort out the items in this room. Where would this stuff go? I would label one box Kodesh, one box Chol, and one box Kodesh Kodeshim, okay? So the mezuzah, right? Where would that go? So usually people tell me that would be Kodesh. I don't know. Sefer Torah, people laugh. Sometimes they say Kodesh Kodeshim. Where would the Sefer Torah go? Where would the table go? Whatever. It's very hard to distinguish between Kodesh and Kodesh Kodeshim. What can we put in the box of Kodesh Kodeshim that cannot be placed in Kodesh? It's either holy or not. Oh, so Yom Kippur and Shabbos. Shabbos is Kodesh. Why is Yom Kippur? Oh, okay. Kohen Nediot and Kohen Gadol. Know that. This is a good example. I'm going to refer to the Kohen Gadol in a second. Also Yom Kippur. Good example. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying, no doubt, I'm going to go back to your comment in a few minutes, you're saying that the reaping of the old man was actually a part of the Vodat Hashem, just like Beit Mikdash, and therefore it's considered Kodesh. No doubt, but still, the Torah doesn't say this explicitly. Why do our sages explain it this way? No doubt, I agree with you 100%. I'm going to go back to your comment in a few minutes. Yeah. No doubt, and I'm going to go back to your comment again in a few minutes, but before I do that, let's read Rav Kook's own definition for Kodesh Kodeshim. Because Rav Kook says, in order for us to understand the role agriculture plays in Eretz Yisrael, we have to first define to ourselves, what is Kodesh Kodeshim? What could be more holy than holy? Rav Kook provides a definition for Kodesh Kodeshim. This definition appears in Orot HaKodesh, and you see it in front of you in source number 4. And whenever when reading the writings of Rav Kook, we encounter the word Kodesh Kodeshim, it means that Rav Kook is referring to this definition. Says Rav Kook, Yesh Olam Shel Chol, Ve'yesh Olam Shel Kodesh, Olamim Shel Chol, Ve'olamim Shel Kodesh. Says Rav Kook, there are worlds of holiness, and there are worlds of secularity. Now let's understand, Rav Kook is not talking up there in the air, he's talking about our lives. In our lives, there's always a distinction, right? I wake up in the morning, I say Modani and Birkot HaShachar, that would be holy, right? I eat, that may be Chol, right? I get into the car, that may be Chol. I go to Daven, that may be Kodesh. There's always, you know, a clear distinction between the holy aspects of our lives and the secular aspects of our lives. Now says Rav Kook, Ha'olamim sutrim ze'eze. Now it seems to us that the worlds are contradicting. Meaning, if I am a lawyer and I practice law, then by doing so, and that is secular, I'm not saying it's forbidden, but it's secular, I am preventing myself currently from studying Torah. So there's a contradiction between secularity and holiness. כמובן, סז רב קוק, הספירה היא סובייקטיבית. Of course, for him it was of course, this contradiction is only relative, meaning, האדם בהשגתו המצומצמת אינו יכול לפשר בין הקודש ובין החול, ואינו יכול להשוות את ספירותיהן. Meaning, it's not really that secularity and holiness contradict each other, but rather, we as human beings, being so narrow-minded as we are, find them to be contradicting. Says Rav Kook, והן אומנם מיושבות ברום עולם, במכון קודש קודשים. And where are those contradictions between Chol and Kodesh reconciled? They're reconciled in Kodesh Kodeshim, because by definition, Kodesh Kodeshim is on a higher level than Kodesh, because sometimes in order to reach an atmosphere of Kedusha, we need to detach ourselves from the secular world. Someone brought here the example of Shabbat. I think that's a great example for Kodesh. What do we do on Shabbat? We reach, we feel the Kedusha, but in order to feel the Kedusha, we stop any melacha, we don't drive our cars, we don't turn on the lights, we stop any melacha, and that's what inspires us. Not only that, but it helps us. The fact that we refrain from the secular world. A higher level, says Rav Kook, is Kodesh Kodeshim, when you don't detach yourself from the secular world, but rather uplift it. And Rav Kook says, this is what happened in Kodesh Kodeshim, and Rav Kook provides, he doesn't, but I uplift it, uplift the chol, the secularity. Rav Kook doesn't give examples for this, but I will try. These are examples I think I already brought in the past in one of the shiurim here, but I'll repeat them for the purpose of the discussion very briefly. For example, I was talking about the kulvim. In Kodesh Kodeshim, we had the kulvim. The Kulvim was a figure, and that figure was an intimate figure. The Midrash says that the Kulvim were Me'urim Zebaze. Me'urim comes from the word Erva. And I said that according to the Midrash, when the Babylonians penetrate the Beit Mikdash, when they conquer Yerushalayim, they rush to the Kodesh Kodeshim because they want to see how the God of the Jews looks like. And when they come to Kodesh Kodeshim, they see this figure, this intimate figure, and they are so appalled, so amazed, that they rush outside, showing everyone, this is the God of the Jews, look at what they believe in. And everyone is like so amazed, and the Midrash says, this is what the Megillah of Eicha means when it says, Kol mechabdeah hizilua, meaning all of those who respected Am Yisrael are now mocking and laughing at Am Yisrael, ki ra'u ervata, because they see this arayot of the Kruvim. The Kruvim, this is what was in the Holy of the Holies? Of course, according to this definition. Because if the Holy of the Holies is the place where the contradictions are reconciled, then even something as seems to be as earthly and secular as Arayot, as this intimacy, even that should and can be uplifted. Another example, you suggested Kohen Gadol. In what sense was Kohen Gadol, who was merited to enter Kodesh Kodeshim, different than other Kohanim? The Mishnah provides a big list. Amongst others, the Mishnah says, Benoi be'osher uvechavod, meaning he was better looking than other Kohanim physically. He was wealthier than other Kohanim, and he was fiercer, he was stronger than other Kohanim. Why did he need those physical traits? Because in Kodesh Kodeshim, those physical traits, those apparently irrelevant traits, are so, so relevant, because this is the definition of perfection, when even the physical appearance matters. Even that is important. Even that should be uplifted, according to Rav Kook. Now let's go back. We said that we carry the title Kodesh Kodeshim, according to Rav Kook. And that is why our agriculture is holy. Explains Rav Kook, what was the true machloket between the Baitasim and the Purushim? It wasn't just a machloket about the Kedusha of Shabbat. The Purushim, our sages, cared for the Kedusha of Shabbat much more than the Baitasim. That wasn't the issue. The issue was, what is the ideal Jew? What is the ideal of Judaism? And says Rav Kook, and I'm skipping to the final paragraph in source number 5, the last one, beginning with the word Habaytosim. Habaytosim, says Rav Kook, lo yachlu lehitamek bisgulat Yisrael hameyuchedet. They, the Baytosim, were unable to understand this great trait, this great gula of Am Yisrael. Ladat et omek hakodesh yesh legoy hazeh. They did not see the depth of the Kedusha of this holy nation. It's not just that we understand Kedusha, but there is depth to our Kedusha. It's a very, very unique kind of Kedusha of Am Yisrael. Asher beshivto al admat kodesho, gam chaklauto uvinyan arso, בכל תוצאותיה המעשיות והקרקעיות, תוכן קודש יש להם. What the Baytosim did not understand is that when Am Yisrael is dwelling, is in Eretz Yisrael, then even agriculture can and should be uplifted, because this is, as we said, by definition, the role of the Jewish nation. Kodesh Kodeshim. And this is what the Baytosim did not understand. For them, the ripping and the cutting of the omer is a chilul Shabbat. It contradicts Kedusha. It goes against the explicit commandments of the Torah not to be mechalel Shabbat. For us, what the Purushim are emphasizing here is that this is no chilul Shabbat whatsoever, but rather, this is Kodesh Kodeshim. Because in Eretz Yisrael, even the ripping of the omer, even this agricultural, even agriculture is not means for survival. This is ideally the role of a Jew. By the way, it's not that Rav Kook is now calling all of us to in Eretz Yisrael be mechalel Shabbat because we're doing agricultural stuff. Obviously, we're talking only about this explicit mitzvah that our sages clearly said that this is the explanation that mimochorat Shabbat is Masa Yom Tov, and obviously this is not a general rule to be mechalel Shabbat in the sake of agriculture. But there's a lot of symbolism here, says Rav Kook. And there's a lot of depth to this machloket between the Purushim and the Baytosim. They're not just talking about the literal meaning of the Torah. There's a lot of depth. This is a different hashkafa. This is a different perception of the role of agriculture in the Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously. Because, again, the calendar was changed, because if we can prevent it, theoretically, then I think, obviously, it's better off this way. We're not calling for a massive Chilul Shabbat. But theoretically, we have the possibility of being Mechalel Shabbat. And not only do we have the possibility, but when it occurs on Shabbat, everyone has to notice. It's Shabbat and we are reaping the Omer. But you're right that we have changed it. Yeah. Right. Very, very true. Sometimes we have so many limitations and so many borders and so many restrictions in the general rule. But as you said, when you get married, that is. Oh, we'll get back to the chametz in a second. But this is by definition kodesh kodeshim, where even those concepts that are generally restricted, in the right setting, the right timing, and obviously with it becomes a mitzvah. It becomes a mitzvah. It's not apologetic. And we're going to talk about the mitzvah in a second. Yeah. You know what? I will address your question in a second when we read the following source. Hopefully. Tell me if it answers it. So our issue is, bottom line, we have seen that the machloket of the Purushim of the Baytosim has a lot of depth, and it has to do with the role agriculture plays in the life of the Jewish nation in Eretz Yisrael. And as Rav Kook says, in Eretz Yisrael, the connection between the Omer and Eretz Yisrael is as deep as that, as we can actualize our abilities to uplift the Chol in within that framework in Eretz Yisrael, and Sfirat HaOmer is symbolic of that ability. And in that sense, it seems to me that Rav Kook is shedding light on the first midrash that we have started with, when the midrash is asking, what is the connection between Sfirat HaOmer and our merits over Eretz Yisrael? Says Rav Kook, this is the connection. The connection is that Sfirat HaOmer teaches us how in Eretz Yisrael, even the physical, secular world as agriculture can and should be uplifted and is Kedusha. But there's more to it. There's more to it. There's a very famous machloket that I keep bringing up in a lot of shiurim, a very famous machloket between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai regarding the ideal Jew, right? And we talked about the ideal Jew briefly here. We know that there are two contradicting verses that are brought in the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. On one hand, we read in Chumash Dvarim, Ve'asavta deganecha v'tiroshcha v'itzarecha, we recite it every day in Kriyat Shema. What is Ve'asavta deganecha v'tiroshcha v'itzarecha? It seems that the Torah is commanding us to do what? To work the land, right? To harvest and farm and do all those physical works in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, it says, the Midrash says in verse number 6, Lo yamus sefer haTorah ze mipicha, meaning you should study Torah 24-7 without a stop. What does it say so in the Torah, by the way? But where is that said? It's actually not said in the Torah. This is a pasuk that appears in Sefer Yehoshua, which is interesting because I think that the Midrash is making a point here. I cannot even support this argument with a pasuk from the Torah, but that's an issue by itself. I don't want to get into it. Bottom line, the Midrash says, how can we reconcile those two apparently contradicting verses? There is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that you cannot reconcile them, and that ideally a Jew must study Torah 24-7. That is the ideal Jew. Rabbi Ishmael, on the other hand, I come from Na'akiva, so he says Torah v'avodah, one must combine the physical world, and the spiritual world, and one must work and study Torah, as if he's saying that this is the ideal Jew. The Midrash ends by saying that many followed the footsteps of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, meaning many tried just studying Torah and were unsuccessful. Many followed the footsteps of Rabbi Ishmael and were successful. So bottom line, if this is what the Midrash says, who is the ideal Jew? According to the Midrash, who's the ideal Jew? Well, the Chatam Sofer, in an outstanding paragraph in source number 7, says two words. It depends. We cannot answer the question according to the Midrash because it depends. What does it depend on? It depends on where that Jew is located. By the way, the paragraph that we are about to read was censored in many of the publications of the Chatam Sofer's books. You'll see in a second why. The Chatam Sofer says, Nir'eh, source number 7, Nir'eh le'aniyut da'ati, Rabbi Yishmael nam lo amar mikra ve'asavta deganecha, Ela be'eretz Yisrael, ve'rov Yisrael shruin al admatan. Says the Chatam Sofer, it depends on where we are located. If we are in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yishmael thinks that ideally one must combine Torah and Avodah. But in order for the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael to actually be actualized, two primary conditions have to be fulfilled. A, as we said, it has to be in Eretz Yisrael, and B, Rov Yisrael Shruin Al Admatan, meaning the majority of the Jewish population is in Eretz Yisrael. It's not just enough for an individual to be in Eretz Yisrael. Why, if we follow those two conditions, why then, ideally, does Rabbi Yishmael think that one must combine to Rav Avodah? Explains the Chatam Sofer. שהעבודה בקרקע גופה מצווה משום יישוב ארץ ישראל ולהוציא פירותיה הקדושים. Why? It's very simple, says the Chatam Sofer. Because ועשתה דגניך is not a blessing. It's not that the Torah says if you're good, you'll have a lot of crops. It's not what the Torah says. ועשתה דגניך that we recite on קריאת שמה is a mitzvah. And in Eretz Yisrael, following those two conditions, we, when we are enrolling ourselves in physical labor in Eretz Yisrael, that by definition is a mitzvah. And that's why he says, ועל זה צוותה התורה, צוותה התורה, ואספת בגניך, and I'm skipping to the coming line, וכאילו תאמר, לא אניח תפילין מפני שאני עוסק בתורה, החינמי לא יאמר, לא אסף דגנים מפני עסק התורה. Just like we cannot imagine, even the greatest rabbi would say, I wouldn't put on tefillin today because it's a waste of time, I'd rather study Torah. Then in Eretz Yisrael, when the majority of the population in Eretz Yisrael, then the rabbi will say, I will not harvest the crop because it's a waste of time, I need to study Torah. This is a mitzvah, putting on tefillin is a mitzvah, and agriculture in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. You understand why it was censored, of course. Now says the Chatam Sofer, and this is the punchline, ואפשר שאפילו שערי אומנויות שיש בהם יישוב העולם, הכל בכלל המצווה. Now the Chatam Sofer takes this even more to the extreme. After now we've been speaking about agriculture, that's all nice. In our generation, kids think bread grows in the supermarket, so we don't really see agriculture to it. We're not that close to the land. Says the Chatam Sofer, it's not just agriculture. In Eretz Yisrael, even the rest of the omanuyot, meaning the rest of the arts, the rest of the professions, secular professions that are involved in Yishuv Olam, in making and perfecting the world, all of them are under the category of a mitzvah, as he says, just like tefillin. Now you obviously understand why he was saying that, why it was censored. Aval כשאנו מפוזרים בעוונותינו הרבים בין אומות העולם, וכל שמרבה העולם יישוב מוסיף עבודת השם חורבן, מודה רבי ישמעאל לרבי שמעון בר יוחאי. Nevertheless, if these primary conditions are not fulfilled, and we are not in Eretz Yisrael, then Rabbi Ishmael agrees with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, says the Chatam Sofer, and even according to the Hashkafa of Rabbi Ishmael, ideally, the ideal Jew must study Torah 24/7. By the way, it's not that he's saying, and it's not that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is saying, that in the Galut a person cannot make a living. Of course, a person can, but it's not ideal. It's the Diyavad, you need Panasa. In Eretz Yisrael, it's a mitzvah. That's the distinction here. That's the distinction here. So bottom line, going back to the connection between Sfirat HaOmer and Eretz Yisrael, we said that according to Rav Kook, Sfirat HaOmer educates us and teaches us about the concept of Kodesh Kodeshim, about the great merits in Eretz Yisrael, where even the agriculture, even the physical hard labor, and it is hard labor, even that is Kedusha. It's not a waste of time. It's not studying Torah. It's doing it in a different aspect, a different aspect of Kedusha. Chatam Sofer adds to it and says that in Eretz Yisrael, not just the agriculture, but generally, all professions are under that category of a mitzvah. And that is the unique trait of Eretz Yisrael that we hear about and study about during Sfirat HaOmer. But now, maybe this can shed light on the Zohar's question. Because remember that we asked in the name of the Zohar, what happens to the offering of the Chametz? In the beginning, Pesach is all about the matzah. All of a sudden, 50 days later, we bring the Chametz, we sacrifice this upon the altar like a korban. Not like, it's a korban. What happened to the Chametz during those 50 days? The Zohar appears in source number 10. And says the Zohar, I want to read the second paragraph in source number 10, beginning with the word Ela. Mashal lemelech. שהיה לו בן יחיד שחלה. יום אחד התאווה לאכול, אמרו לו הרופאים, יאכל בן המלך מאכל רפואה זה, ועד שלא יבריא, לא יימצא כל מאכל ומזון אחר בבית. The Zohar brings us a parable. And this parable is a story about a prince. And that prince unfortunately fell ill. And because he was very ill, the doctors instructed the king that in the castle, during the illness of the prince, there should not be regular food. If the prince is hungry, then he should eat only very specific types of fruits and vegetables, specific types of food that will help him get better and heal. We know that sometimes when a person is not well, he cannot just eat everything. Says the Zohar, כיוון שאכל בנו אותה רפואה, אמרו לו הרופאים, מכאן והלאה יאכל כל אשר ירצה, ולא יזיק לו. Now the Zohar says, once that prince became better, once he was able to overcome his illness, now the doctor said, Baruch Hashem, the prince is doing well, he can eat whatever he wants. The fact that the prince can eat whatever he wants is an indication that he is well. Obviously, the Zohar is talking about Am Yisrael. When we were redeemed out of Egypt, Baruch Hashem, Hashem, with his grace with his chesed, exited us out of Egypt, but we were ill. We lacked any standing. We had no spiritual strength. We were enslaved in Egypt for 210 years. What were we? We only had our names, right? Esfato, Levusho, and Leshono. Esfato, Levusho, and Shmo. We only had our names, our language, and our clothing. Other than that, we had even no Jewish identity. We were spiritually ill. And for a nation that is spiritually ill, they cannot just eat whatever they want. They cannot eat chametz. In order to help them in their healing process, we focus on the matzah. We refrain from eating chametz. Obviously, very symbolic chametz, as we know that there's the yeast, and the chametz is symbolic of the secular concepts of this world. We focus on spirituality, on the matzah, which is considered lechem she'onin arav arbeh, which is considered a spiritual bread. As we time progresses and we grow better and better, slowly but surely, says the Zohar, we gain more ability and more strength, and slowly we can open up and eat chametz. But it doesn't end there. Ideally, we should eat chametz. Just like the prince, ideally the prince should be healthy and should eat regular food. And that is why, after a process of healing that occurs during those 50 days, eventually, on Shavuot, we sacrifice the chametz upon the altar. This is an indication of our spiritual strength, of the fact that we are now healthy. What the Zohar is actually saying is that the fact that we embrace ourselves in the physical world and are able to uplift our physical world, ideally, after this process of Sfirat HaOmer that happened during those 50 days, this is an indication that we are achieving our goal. The goal of the Jewish nation is to be enrolled in the physical world, is to sacrifice the chametz on the altar. That's normal. It's not normal to detach ourselves from the chametz and run away from it on Pesach. Sometimes we have no choice because we're sick. But if we are healthy, then ideally the chametz must be sacrificed upon the altar. Now going back to the midrash that we have started off with in source number one, it seems to me that what the Zohar is actually implying is exactly what we have said. Yes, there's a clear-cut connection between Sfirat HaOmer and Eretz Yisrael, because Sfirat HaOmer educates us how we can look at our secular world and find meaning in our secular world and uplift our secular world and bring the chametz as a korban in Eretz Yisrael. That is obviously the message of the Midrash. But now I want to ask you a question. You guys remember the Chatam Sofer? The Chatam Sofer said that in order for all of what I have said to be realized and actualized, two conditions, right, we said must be fulfilled. A, being in Eretz Yisrael, and B, the majority of the Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael. Being in Eretz Yisrael, I understand. How? How do we determine when the majority of the Jewish population is in Eretz Yisrael? By the way, it's interesting because to the best of my knowledge, this is the first year where the Sochnut had officially publicized that the majority of the Jewish population this year for the first time is actually in Eretz Yisrael. But that's besides the point. How do we determine when the majority of the Jewish population is in Eretz Yisrael? Well, actually, what the Chatam Sofer is saying is not, he didn't just say this out of the blue, those two conditions. Chatam Sofer is referring to a halachic rule that appears amongst others in the Gemara in Masechet Brachot in source number 12. There is a general rule of how you define a Jewish population, which the Gemara calls Ochlusa. And the Gemara says as follows in source number 12. Amar Ula Naktinan El Ochlusa Bebavel. First of all, when you define a Jewish population, the first rule is that it cannot be considered a Jewish crowd in Bavel, meaning outside Eretz Yisrael. Those days Bavel was popular. I think now Bavel is kind of less popular. But what can we do? El Ochlusa Bebavel, meaning it has to be in Eretz Yisrael. El Ochlusa Pchuta Mishishim Ribo. What's the second condition for the definition of a crowd? It has to be at least Shishim Ribo, which is 600,000 Jews. How many Jews were in Eretz Israel on the date of the Declaration of Independence? 600,000 Jews. According to the official records, 600,000 Jews. Ben Gurion, by the way, says it. 600,000 Jews. So, I think that when reading the Midrash that talks about Sfirat HaOmer, when Eretz Yisrael is becoming a reality, and when the ability to uplift our physical world is no longer theoretical, but this is the way of living in Eretz Yisrael, and it so happens to be that in Eretz Yisrael, in the midst of Sfirat HaOmer, 600,000 Jews declare independence. It seems more than a coincidence to me. I want to end with a very, I consider, inspiring source of this Fateme, which appears in source number 8. Whenever I read this, I feel I get the chills. The Sfatemet is talking about the connection between the Chagim that appear in the Torah, the festivals that are Midoraita, and the festivals that are Midrabanan. And says the Sfatemet, Chanukah ufurim hem he'arot miregalim. Says the Sfatemet, Chanukah, which is the Chag Midrabanan, and Purim, which is the Chag Midrabanan, are reflections of the regalim, of the three regalim. Why? רק הגימל הרגלים המפורשים בתורה הם תורה שבכתב, ויש כנגד זה גם כן רגלים בתורה שבעל פה, והם אורות המקבלים כדמיון אור הלבנה שהיא לאור החמה כידוע. We know that in the Torah we have three regalim, right? We have Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Now says the Sfatemet, the Chiddush, we don't just have three regalim from the Torah, but we also have three regalim midarabanan. Each regal that appears in the Torah is actually having a reflection, a regal that is midarabanan. The Sfatemet compares this to the light of the moon as opposed to the light of the sun. We know that the light of the sun is actually the source of light. The moon, as we know it, is just a reflection of that light. Now, it's not that we don't have light as an outcome of the, you know, the moon does shed light, but still, it's a reflection of the original light of the sun. There's the light of the sun, which is the regalim, and there's the light of the moon, a reflection of that light, which is the regalim of the Rabbanan. Says the Sfatemet, כן על ידי כוחן של בני ישראל בקבלתם היום טוב כראוי, נשאר מכל טוב, מכל יום טוב רשימת בכנסת ישראל, ובכוח זה הוציא כנגדם רגלים אחרים. Why does it happen? Because when we are undergoing a certain chag, a certain regal midoraita, we are so inspired. We get the message of the chag, and that gives us power to create the same, to create a chag that's bearing the same message. That is what we do. Now says the Sfatemet, V'chanukah he'ara mi'chag ha'sukot. Okay, so we said we have three regalim and we have chagim midrabanan. So Chanukah, would that be a reflection of which chag? Obviously, says the Sfatemet, Chanukah is a reflection of Sukkot. First of all, we know that theoretically, we know that Chanukah happened on Sukkot. We know that there's a lot of connection between Chanukah and Sukkot. Amongst others, if you know the machloket between Hillel and Shammai, how many candles do you light each day, Shammai supports his claim with the korbanot that you bring on Sukkot. So whatever, there's a clear-cut connection between Chanukah and Sukkot, at least according to the Midrash. Ufurim mechag ha-shavuot, and Purim is a reflection of Chag ha-shavuot, and that is also based on the Midrash, because the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat says that when Bnei Yisrael accepted the Torah in Shavuot, it wasn't that, you know, perfect, but they have corrected that on Purim. That's one example. There are other Midrashim that talk about the connection between Purim and Sukkot. What are we left with? Pesach. ומחג הפסח מקווים אנו להיות עוד, כמו שנאמר, כי מיצאתך מארץ מצרים אראנו נפלאות. We're still waiting, says the Sfatemet, back then. We're waiting for a chag midrabanan. There's one chag midrabanan missing. A reflection of the concept of Pesach, of understanding the power of the redemption. And we're still waiting so that we will be merited to celebrate a chag that is symbolic of the concept of Ki Meitzatcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Areinu Niflot. I think that in our generation, we have been extremely privileged to celebrate a chag that is a profound message of the understanding of the redemption process, of redeeming ourselves from the Galut in Eretz Yisrael, the majority of the population in Eretz Yisrael, able to exercise and actualize the ideal concept of uplifting the physical world all during Sfirat HaOmer. I think that there's no greater way of answering the Sfatemet and saying to the Sfatemet, we have been merited to see what you have been talking about become a reality. We have a third regel. And I think it's not just a zchut. I consider it an obligation. It's an obligation for the Jewish nation, towards the Jewish nation. It's an obligation in the sense of hakarat hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for us to recognize the greatness and the importance of this great, great chag that we shall, in this session, celebrate this Wednesday, Yom HaAtzmaut, Hei Be'iyal, V'Yiratzon, that this is not just going to be the beginning of Atchata Degua, but that we will be merited already this year to see Ki Meitzetcha Meretz Mitzrayim Arenu Niflaot, and that we will be Zochet Degula Shlema. Chag Sameach.